Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. This hour, our topic is public charter schools in the Bay Area. Are they delivering on their promise? There are more charter schools in California than any other state in the nation. And the Bay Area is home to some of the most well-known in the country, such as KIPP, Aspire, and Rocket Ship Schools. In this state, charter schools have seen tremendous growth since the first enterprise opened in 1993. And now, some two decades later, charter schools in California number around 1,000 and collectively enroll over 400,000 students. The concept behind a public charter school is to create learning environments that foster innovative practices by waiving many of the regulations that govern traditional public schools. The results of this arrangement, advocates say, is improvement in achievement, especially among economically disadvantaged and traditionally underserved students. In turn, they hope their successes can serve as a model that could be spread to traditional public schools. Critics, however, claim that public charter schools as a whole have a mixed record when it comes to impacting student achievement and are a drain on public education dollars, especially in this time of ever-dwindling resources for public schools. So tonight, we look at public charter schools and examine their impact in the Bay Area. What makes a school a charter school, and how are charter schools different from traditional public schools? Why are more parents choosing charter schools for their children, and how is this choice affecting school districts? And are charter schools fulfilling their promise to raise student achievement and improve public schools as a whole? Well, we'll ask our guests those questions. And by phone, we have Seba Ali. She is the Chief Academic Officer for Knowledge is Power Program, or KIPP, Bay Area Schools, and the founder of the KIPP Hartwood Academy in San Jose. The KIPP Bay Area operates seven charter schools that serve over 2,000 students, mostly minority and low income. Welcome, Seba.
Thank you. Good evening. Thank you for having me tonight.
Thanks for joining us. And in the studio, we're joined by two guests. First, we have Deborah Davis, and she is the research manager for the Center for Research on Education Outcomes, or CREDO. CREDO is a research group based at Stanford University that is committed to improving the body of empirical evidence about education reform and student performance at the primary and secondary school levels. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you.
And finally, we're joined by Jill Wins, and she's the president of the San Francisco Unified School District Board.
No, I'm not.
Oh, what are you?
I'm a member of the Board of Education, and I'm the president of the California School Boards Association.
Well, thank you for correcting me there. And she was recently elected president of this California School Board Association. And in the spirit of full disclosure, we note that the San Francisco Unified School District holds the operating license for KLW, and we are housed in one of the district's school buildings. So, as always, we invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation. We'll open our lines in about 20 minutes or so, and you can call in at 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. You can email us now at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com, or you can post a comment on Facebook. Just look for us under City Visions. So I wanted to start with you, Deborah Davis. How would you define a charter school?
A charter school is a public school, a school that is publicly funded, that is free of a lot of the regulations that traditional public schools have. And in return for that autonomy is and that flexibility is a contract with whoever authorized that school to exist to have some more accountability.
And so tell us a little bit more about what one means by flexibility or freedom from regulation.
Sure. So most charter schools are free to choose the curriculum as long as they follow the state standards. They're free to choose the curriculum that they want to use. They're free to hire and fire teachers. Principals have a lot more autonomy than they do in a traditional public school district most of the time. And students are, it's a school that students choose to go to as opposed to being assigned to.
And when you say choose, what exactly do you mean?
A student can apply to go to that school, and because it's a public school, the school has to accept them if they have room at their school.
And what happens if there isn't room at the school?
A lot of times there's a lottery put in place for over-enrolled spots. So if if 80 students apply to a school and there's only 50 spots in one grade, then they'll do a lottery for those 50 spots.
And is there any formula by which, again, that mixture of the students is determined, any weighting of factors, for example?
It depends. Across the country, there are different rules, and in certain schools, there are different rules for that. But usually, it's just a lottery, like the California lottery.
Okay, so they just put the number of children in the pool, and then they select until they've filled the spaces.
Yes.
Okay, so let's go to Jill Wins for a moment. Just before we aired, you were saying that perhaps you have a different opinion on what makes a public charter school
a
charter
school. I do, but actually I would never use the term a public charter school.
And why is that?
Because they're not public schools. They are publicly funded, privately managed schools. And there is no other place in our universe where you would describe something, an organization which is required to be a private nonprofit as a public agency. So you would not say that the health agency down the street that gets private money is a public agency. It's not. Charter schools are, by definition, they are privately managed. And in addition to that, the very limited accountability that the chartering agency in California school boards or the State Board of Education is defined by law as being extremely limited. It says you can only look at these things. So, for instance, you talked about how kids get into charter schools, and they're supposedly not allowed to discriminate, but there is no regulation. So nobody monitors or is allowed to monitor the way that they do their admissions. And so there's all kinds of people who report anecdotally, the only way we get that information, that when you go to a charter school to apply, if your child is disabled or if your child is at the I have examples of people at KIPP schools. The KIPP schools test the kids and say, well, I have talked to people who have been told, well, even though your child, according to the public school district, is going into the fifth grade or the sixth grade, we don't think they should. If they come to KIPP, they have to go back to a certain grade. So,
And what's wrong with that?
Nothing's wrong with it if you say that's what you do. But if you, if it's a public agency, we would not be allowed to do that. We would not be allowed to say, well, we're going to say that we could pass a policy. There are school districts that have policies that won't do so-called social promotion. We try not to do that. But we do not give any administrator the power to say this kid is not going into that grade, has to go into that grade. We require them to comply with our policies. So the accountability is extremely limited, and extremely limited by law. And therefore, they're run by private agencies and by private self-perpetuating boards, just like any other private nonprofit. And therefore, by definition, in my mind, not a public school.
But are they called public schools?
Yes. Bizarrely, the state code defines them as public schools. So this is the only place where you have in the law something that says you have to be a private agency, but we're going to call you a public school.
And why is that distinction so important to you?
It's important to me because public accountability is the essence of what public education is. And in America, public accountability is represented by boards of education in almost every part of the country elected. And in fact, the very few places where boards are appointed are mostly big cities in the East and the Midwest. There are no appointed boards in the Western United States. So, voters and citizens of the United States consider their ability to control the public education system through a democratic process to be the core of what American democracy is about. And yet we have people in all political stripes and in both parties saying what I just described to you, bizarrely calling private agencies public schools. So for me, I mean, that's what I do, is I am the representative of 5,000 publicly elected school board members in California, and we represent public accountability and public ownership of the democracy's most precious resource.
So is your concern with the charter schools themselves or with the laws that created them?
Well, I think that after this amount of time, and by the way, the charter law in California is precisely the same age as my tenure on the San Francisco Board of Education. So I started to serve in January of 1993 when the charter law took effect. And I think now, after this amount of time, what we've seen is that we are risking giving up that public democratic accountability for what, in my view, is not much gain.
And I think this is a good point to bring in Seba Ali. She's the Chief Academic Officer for Knowledge's Power Program, or KIPP Bay Area Schools, and founder of the KIPP Heartwood Academy in San Jose. Seba, how do you respond to Jill Wynn's and Devra's characterization of what charter schools are and what they aren't?
As defined by law, and I believe that charter schools are public schools. We are held publicly accountable to serving our students. We outline what we set out to do in our charters, and our charters must be approved by either the school district, the state, or a university, and authorized by them. And then we are accountable to those agencies for how we perform and what we do. We're also highly accountable to ourselves. I mean, we believe that charter schools should be high-performing, that we should be models of excellence. And we hold ourselves accountable. At KIPP, we have our own accountability system where we review schools in their early years to see how they're doing and to help them along if they're not doing well and possibly even to shut them down. So I definitely believe in high accountability for charter schools and all public schools. I do believe that we are public schools. We take the state test just like any other schools, and we are funded in, for the most part, by public dollars.
And can you give us a breakdown, for example, of the KIPP schools in the Bay Area, how their funding breaks down in terms of public versus other sources of funding?
Sure. 75% of our funding comes through the state and federal revenue sources, just like any other public school. And then to make up the difference for what we really feel we need to provide our students in terms of sports, extra enrichment activities, college trips, an extended day and extended school year, and teachers being available at night on their cell phones to help students, we fundraise about 25% of our budget.
And how about who your students are? Who makes up your student body? In terms of the question that Jill raised about perhaps maybe you have a little bit more say in where the child goes to school, or do you have say in whether you take them in or not?
Like all other charter schools, we operate under a lottery system, so we are completely blind to students' prior academic records and prior behavior records. Their names are put in a lottery, and we draw from that lottery. And students, when we are full, students are placed on a waiting list and are admitted on a first-come, first-served basis off the waiting list. In terms of how we characterize our students, 75% of our students at KIPP Bay Area Schools are low-income, and over 90% are students of color. We locate in underserved areas so that we can serve students from our local neighborhoods and serve students who choose to come to KIPP and who are looking for a college preparatory education.
And so back to you, Jill Wynn's, for a moment. To respond to some of what Seba just mentioned, she says that the schools are accountable not only to their own boards, but they have to be accountable to the chartering organization, which is a public school district, and that more than, you know, three-quarters of their funding comes from public entities. So there's some question there as to where is the line for you about what makes something public versus private. And they do seem to be serving a disadvantaged population.
Yeah. Well, with all due respect, I take the position that accountability to themselves, the employees of the school who are paid by the school, all schools have that same sensibility. There are not more dedicated public servants in the world than public school teachers, principals, administrators, and people who, for very small, paltry salaries for the most part, dedicate themselves to educating the students of America. But so that's great. I mean, I'm so glad that they feel the accountability, but that is not public accountability at all. So, and in fact, it's very interesting because this issue, and I would again also disagree a little bit with the idea that the charter is a, I understand this is the concept that it's a contract and there is the trade-off is supposed to be relief from overregulation in exchange for a high level of accountability. But the presumption is that accountability means people choose to go there, and that's all. So it is the infusion of the competitive market principles into that's how we define accountability. So if that were the only accountability that publicly managed schools had, you know, we then, if you were to say, look, regardless, and I could give you, name you 5 or 10 schools in San Francisco that people who go there and their neighborhoods love them, that do not meet the standards either that we as a school district set or that the state and federal government sets, and yet they are not allowed to have that same level of accountability that we say, not we, but that the proponents say that charter schools have.
So, Deborah?
That version of accountability, that idea of accountability just being about parents choosing the school, has evolved over the last few years and is much, I think it's a richer version of accountability or vision of accountability that the charter school community has. And it involves two things, and it is all around authorizers, the people who authorize the charter schools and allow them to exist, all around authorizer responsibility in who they let in and who they allow to continue running schools. And so that version of accountability is not, it's not based on just do a lot of parents like to go there. And a model law, for example, of this new version of accountability is in Indiana, where they set out exactly what the authorizers need to look at to allow a school to start up and also to allow a school to continue to renew their charter. And that was very, the legislature there was very clear that the things you need to look at are student achievement, both level and growth, and also finances of the school, which is a very important thing to look at. Is the school financially healthy, and is the school operating in a way that is in line with spending public dollars? So there's academics and there's finances and there's governance pieces to accountability now that didn't exist in sort of the early days of charter schools. And I think we'll see a lot more of that new version of accountability kind of sweeping across legislation in all states.
And Seba, do you have to account for all of those things when you talk about the accountability piece, the academic achievement, the financial soundness, and the governance that Deborah was outlining there?
Absolutely. We are held accountable by our school districts, who are our authorizers at KIPP Area Schools, for our academic achievement. We set high goals for academic achievement. This past year, KIPP Area Schools had an academic performance index score, an API score of 875 on average, which is...
What does that mean?
It's the API is measured between 200 and 1,000, and 1,000 is the highest score that a school can get. And 875 puts us in, you know, if we were our own school district between the 7 schools in the Bay Area, we'd be in the top 10% of all school districts in the state of California in terms of our performance, regardless of demographics. So we definitely are held accountable for our student achievement results.
How about the finance and the governance?
We are held accountable for our financial operations and being fiscally sound, and we are held accountable for our governance procedures. All of our board meetings are public, and our board is held accountable as well. And so, yes, we are held accountable in all of those ways, and we take that accountability very seriously. And in fact, we at KIPP have created what we call a healthy schools rubric. And so we measure ourselves internally against these six questions, which have to do with this accountability as well. You know, are we financially sustainable? Are we sustainable with our people model? Are we serving the students who need us? Are our students achieving in the way that we need them to? Mm-hmm. So we ask ourselves these questions, and we report very publicly on these on how we're doing against these questions as well in our annual report card, on our website, and anytime we talk about KIPP.
I have to say something,
Jill,
about that. I mean, I'm one of the authorizers of two of the KIPP Bay Area schools, although I have to say I've not voted for the KIPP schools. There are some charter schools I voted for and supported because I think they actually serve what I think the purpose of charter should be. However, the ways that authorizers are allowed to define accountability in those areas are extremely narrow. And I would, for instance, say, and in particular because this is, of course, my area of interest and expertise, but I think it's very defensible to say that the governance area that in charter schools is a very loose and low standard for accountability for charter schools. So basically, all that we are really allowed to do is to affirm that charter schools, in fact, have a board. And they may, so, for instance, all our meetings are public. I can guarantee you that even though every single charter in California is subject to the Brown Act, that not a single one of them complies with the Brown Act. And frankly, I think that there ought to be, if we want to have, which I don't, but if we had an honest discussion about that, this, and said, we want to have privately managed, publicly funded schools. We're for private management. Let people who support charters stand up and say, I think private management is a better way to educate the youth of America than public management. And if that's what they believe, I'll disagree with them, and we can have that debate. But we're having a bizarre debate about whether a private company is public, which is not, you know, which I think is just a given that it's not. And we say, let's talk about private management. But so I think that the issue, I'll give you a perfect example. The California School Boards Association for 4 years has sponsored a bill that would require the boards of charter schools to comply with the same conflict of interest laws that publicly elected school board members have to follow. And a Republican and a Democratic governor have vetoed that bill. And what actually happens in California is that people who are employed by the school, by the charter school or charter management company, are allowed to be members of that board and to vote on their own compensation. That's not public accountability, in my view. And I think that if charter proponents really want to embrace public accountability, that's the first small step they should take, is to say, we will not have institutionalized conflicts of interest.
And just in case you're joining us now, this is City Visions on 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at kalw.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing public charter schools with our guest Seba Ali. She's Chief Academic Officer for KIPP Bay Area Schools. Deborah Davis, Research Manager for the Center for Research on Education Outcomes, or CREDO, based out of Stanford University. And we were just hearing from Jill Wins, and she's a member of the school board here in the San Francisco Unified School District and was recently elected president of the California School Boards Association. 415-841-4134 is the number to dial to join our conversation this evening with your questions and comments for our guests. 415-841-4134, or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. So, Jill, I don't want to lose one thing you said. You had an idea of what the true purpose of charter schools are, and you said you voted for a couple because you felt like they met what you believe is what the purpose of charter schools are.
Here's what I think. I freely understand and admit that there are regulatory complexities that make it difficult to do the things we'd like to do or need to do for our students, particularly the most complex situations that present themselves to us. So there are two charter schools in San Francisco that I have enthusiastically supported. One is Life Learning Academy. It is run by the Delancey Street Foundation. It is connected to the Juvenile Justice Initiative in San Francisco. They're mostly kids who are on probation. They, just like Delancey Street for adults, they You know, we have an organization that will take kids who have the highest needs and help them in a way that a organized public school with lots of other students in it really has trouble doing. And they have had extraordinary results. And this is the most important thing. They need a charter to do what they do. They cannot comply with those laws and regulations. So they merge different funding streams from the probation and juvenile justice and schools and all kinds of other things, et cetera. Second, the sheriff runs Sheriff's Department in San Francisco runs a charter school for inmates in the jail that's been extraordinarily successful, something we are not good at doing either.
415-841-4134 or feedback at cityvisionsradio.com. Let's go to our first caller, Craig from Los Altos. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. Los Altos has a charter school, and they're funded by the state, and specifically for the charter schools or the students in Los Altos Hills. And it seems to be that these students are being funded by the public. It's a very elitist school district. They take only kids from Los Altos Hills. And I'm wondering how that is justified with the charter school mandate.
And can you tell us which school this is?
This is Bulla School.
Okay. And how do you know that they're just taking children from the Los Altos Hills area?
I forget the number, but the predominance of the school, of the students within the school, are from Los Altos Hills. And clearly this, you know, Los Altos Hills is a very, very exclusive, very high-income community. And they have set up a charter school that's housed in Los Altos. I think the number is 84% of the students are from Los Altos Hills, and I don't know that exactly, but I'm sure there's one of the callers that can give you the number.
Okay. Thanks so much, Craig. Thanks so much for your call. So, Deborah, did you want to take this one?
Sure. I think the question was, is that charter school allowed to exist under charter school law?
Exactly, but and seems to, according to this caller, be taking children of higher means.
Sure. There's... As far as I understand California charter school law, so every state has their own charter school law. I want to be clear about that. We didn't talk about that earlier. Mm-hmm. As far as I understand California charter school law, there's no mandate that it has to be serving underserved populations. So a charter school that would locate in Los Altos Hills is likely to have mostly Los Altos Hills students.
Okay. And producer just cued me here that the Wall Street Journal recently had an article about this school, and it seems like, according to this article, the school requires donations of $1,000 or more per student per year, which is deemed to be pretty controversial. Have you heard about this particular school?
I have heard about that, and I don't think that is a very widespread practice, and I don't know that that's legal.
I don't think it is legal. Requiring
donations. Okay. They may suggest donations. My own traditional public school where my kids go does also do the same thing where they request a certain donation from every family, but obviously my kids still go there whether we pay that or not. So I would guess that it's a similar scenario in that charter school, but if they're actually making a requirement for enrollment to have a certain donation, I don't think that's legal.
Okay. 415-841-4134 or feedback at cityvisionsradio.com. I wanted to move the conversation away from the accountability public versus not public.
Good.
Because I think that's not going to get us deeper into this topic. Back to something you were talking about, Seba, earlier, which is your academic performance index. Is that right? The API. How widespread is that type of achievement in the schools that you are, that your organization, KIPP Bay Area, but KIPP across the country? How common is that kind of achievement? And how do KIPP schools stack up to traditional public schools in their similar districts?
KIPP schools are often some of the highest performing schools in their school districts. At KIPP Bay Area schools, one of our schools in San Jose is a nationally recognized Blue Ribbon school. All five of our middle schools are California Distinguished Schools. And as I said, our regional average API score is 875. Our two high schools, one located in San Lorenzo and one located in San Jose, are amongst the highest performing high schools in California. So, you know, typically KIPP schools outperform their similar schools in their neighborhoods.
And how do you account for that?
Through very deliberate building of student culture, school culture. We have excellent teachers. We spend a lot of time and a lot of energy with our teachers, with their professional development, and with making sure that they have the resources they need to be able to teach in the best way that they know how. Our teachers are our most valuable resource. We also have great relationships with our parents, and we feel that they're very important partners in our students' education.
And what is it about the way you're set up, and in terms of the types of rules and regulations you don't need to answer to? What is it about that you think allows you to create these types of environments that you say are creating high performing schools?
You know, as Deborah mentioned, we have the freedom to choose our curriculum within the California state standards, so we're able to serve our kids in the ways that they need and do for them what they need. So if we find particular students need help in this area, we provide additional tutorials. If we find that a whole class needs extra work on another particular area, then we spend more time on that. So we have a flexible curriculum in that sense. We also have the ability to hire the teachers that we need to hire to serve our students. And we have the freedom, our principals have the freedom to manage their budget. So if they need to allocate certain dollars to, for example, extracurricular activities or to music or to a science lab budget, then they're able to do that very quickly.
415-841-4134 or feedback at cityvisionsradio.com. Let's go to our next caller, Andy from Redwood City. Welcome to our program. Andy, are you there? Yes, you're on the air.
Hello, thank you. Yeah, I wanted your experts to comment if they've heard of a study by Credo and Stanford University on charter schools.
And one of our guests is from Credo, so I think
I've heard of it.
You've called the right place. Go ahead.
All right. Great. And the study basically shows that there's no net gain from charter schools. 20% of students improve, 40% did worse, and 40% of students stay the same. And also comment on, aren't charter schools really to just bust the unions and to privatize our school system? This is being done by the far right of our country to just get rid of public schools and bust the unions. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks very much, Andy, for your call. So there's several things that Andy said there. I want to make sure we get to each of them because I know, Jill, you're jumping to comment here. But first, let's go to Devra. Tell us about the Credo study and tell us what you find when you look at charter school performance overall compared to traditional public schools.
Sure. So the study that we did that was referenced by the caller was done in 2009, and it was a national study that paired students from charter schools with students from traditional public schools who looked like them and attended the schools that the charter school students would have attended or had attended in the past. And so we looked at student growth over time. And when we break out the charter school performance, which was the statistic that the caller mentioned, we found that 17% of charter schools have a positive and significant effect versus their traditional public school counterparts, and 46% were statistically insignificant. So there was no difference between the charters and their TPS is what we call traditional public school counterpart, and then 37% were underperforming compared to TPS. So that's the statistic. 17% do better. So really, what we see there is that there's a wide range of performance, and some charters are hitting it out of the park. And other charters, like a lot of new businesses, probably should close because they're not getting it done. And that's really why I think there's been a focus on quality charter schools over the last 5 years, is because there's growing awareness in the charter school community that letting 1,000 flowers bloom might have been a fine theory, but the way it should work in practice is really that accountability piece of the flexibility for accountability equation really needed to have more attention.
And could you ferret out in your research what distinguished those 17% of schools that outperformed or overperformed their traditional public schools?
We were not able to do that. We've actually been doing research since then trying to tease all those things out. But
any working hypothesis?
What I really think is that charters that are hitting it out of the park have a very clear mission about serving especially underserved students and have a very clear mission about what they need to do, like getting them to college, for example, and how they need to do it. So the people that they need to be to have in place to do that, the culture in the school that needs to be in place to do that, and then basically being completely mission-driven organizations. It's just like a great traditional public school is the same way, and a great business is the same way. They're mission-driven, they're focused, they know what they need to do, and they do it. They execute.
Hmm. And Jill, I think I could probably guess your answer to the second part of Andy's question, but his concern is that this is really a movement towards privatization and trying to really break through teachers' unions and
well,
really get at that.
Well, I think it is. Yes, I think the union issue is a very concerning, serious issue, and I think there's a lot of intention to do that. One thing I would, and I am 100% certain that this is a strategy to privatize public education. I think one of the things that he said, which we would like to be true, is that this is sort of the plan of the far right, and I think that certainly the far right does support this plan. But here's the really concerning thing: so does the left. So it's the president, who is a Democrat, and the Secretary of Education, and every Democratic leader in the legislature who says, you know, we need to have more charter schools. And my answer to them, or my question to them, is based on what data? Because the data that was just referred to is the data we see. If I said to you, you know what, here's a school, this is an option for you, you got a 17% chance of getting a better education than in a publicly managed and publicly accountable school. But you also, by the way, have double that chance of getting a worse education than you would in a publicly managed school.
But that's a nationwide statistic.
I
understand
that, but
in certain states, you have a much greater chance of doing better in a charter school. California is a mixed bag. It's in the middle. But out of the 20 states that we've done, in 2009, we did 16. We've done a few since then. Out of the 20 states that we've done since then, 8 of them are better in both reading and math. The charter school sector is better in both reading and math than the traditional public schools that look like them. So you don't have a 17%. You have a 17% chance nationwide.
I understand that.
But it's not like a 17% chance for every single person.
It depends on the school.
We were talking about this before the show. I actually don't think it's that important that we look at the specifics of this data. Here's what we've learned in 2 decades of risking public and democratic accountability for what we were promised would be much higher achievement. What the data tells us is that, generally speaking, if you take them all together, public schools are no worse and no better than publicly managed, accountable schools. So what have we really learned? What we have learned is that flexibility, relief from overregulation, ought to apply to everybody. This is what we've learned. Not that we need more charter schools, but that we need less regulation. So if all the charter advocates wanted to get together with the California School Boards Association and propose that we suspend the Ed Code in California for the next 10 years and see what happens, I'm the leader. I'm for
it. Right, because what you're also saying there is less accountability isn't necessarily showing a lot poorer performance.
That's right.
415-841-4134 or feedback at cityvisionsradio.com. We have a couple of calls coming in, but before that, I wanted to get Siba to join in on the last couple of comments here that have been made.
Sure. You know, I think for us, we find for us, we really want to hold ourselves accountable to high standards, and that's of utmost importance for us. Like I said, we measure ourselves on an annual basis to see how we're doing against our own internal metrics. In addition, you know, we look at how we're doing compared to all the schools that surround us. And we really believe that charter schools should be like learning labs, centers of excellence that you know, other folks can come and learn from, and that we can learn from other people as well. And so, for example, with our I3 Innovation Grant money, KIPP nationally is starting this KIPP Leadership Design Fellowship this year, which is an 8-month-long fellowship that allows principals and school district administrators to learn how we train our principals and how we train our KIPP staff. And so we really are interested in taking what we do and sharing it out.
And Seba, to get to the point of teacher choice in hiring and firing, and perhaps some of the thoughts that, you know, unions and union protections for teachers are perhaps maybe some of the reasons why schools are not performing as well as they could. I bet the phones are going to light up right now. But what do you feel, how much do you feel that teacher choice is a big part of the success that you have experienced?
You know, we absolutely believe that the freedom to hire our teachers is an important one. And we take our, you know, our teachers are our greatest asset. And so we make sure that we provide a collegial environment where teachers and students can all learn. We provide professional development for our teachers. We help our teachers gain access to high-quality lesson plans so they don't have to constantly reinvent the wheel. They're getting observed. They're getting feedback. They're getting opportunities to go out and learn and to collaborate with their peers. And our teachers are very committed to our mission to help our kids get to and through college. And so we find that we have an incredibly dedicated teaching staff.
And so to this issue...
So do we.
and to this issue of teachers, let's go to Eric. Welcome to the program. Eric, are you on the line?
I'm Mike.
Oh, okay. I was going to go with Eric first, but let's go with Mike from Daly City.
Yes, good evening. I have a couple of questions. I'm not even sure who the best person would be to answer this, but regarding the 25%+, or if that's an average for charter schools that they raise through fundraising, and I wonder if the Credo survey or anything else took into account the budget cuts that have been going on for the past 5 to 10 years, and if we had at any point during that period one of these tax initiatives that are going to be on the ballot in 2012, what that might have done to the results for student achievement in the public schools.
They did not. None of the studies.
We did not have access to financial data. That's
right.
Correct.
Because
it's very hard to come by, by the way.
And thank you for bringing that up. Because
I have a follow-up comment.
Go ahead.
Just because it has to do with the way the UC system is now being handled, where fees are going up and up and up and not compensating for the cuts. And we may end up with charter universities pretty soon the same way if we keep going down this road.
Thanks so much for your call. And that was Mike from Daly City. So back to this question of teachers. How are teachers compensated in the traditional public school system compared to charter schools? Is that something that you have a handle on, Devra?
I have not done a lot of research on the finances of either traditional public schools or on charter schools.
Well,
we're focused more on performance.
The charter schools in the Bay Area that I know of, and certainly for the ones that we've authorized in San Francisco, including, as I said, 2 KIPP schools, teachers basically, they use the same salary scales, you know, to try to have comparability and be competitive. However, the teachers tend to often, and I don't know about the specifics of this, of the KIPP schools we're talking about, but anyway, they tend to actually make less money because they tend to be young, inexperienced teachers in charter schools. So tradition, it's kind of like the, you know, airlines, you know, we have a lot more experience at the top. We have a lot more obligations to lifetime health benefits, all of those kinds of things. I support all of those things. I think the public sector, the public schools should have the best possible, you know, as much as we can pay teachers, we should pay them. We should value their work. It's extraordinarily valuable work, and they should have good benefits, good pensions, and job security, because the work they do is that important. So the costs of teachers are about the same. You know, the issue about teacher unions is a very interesting issue. There's a lot of research on that. One of the things I'll just say is that the student achievement tends to be highest in highly unionized states and lowest in right-to-work states. Just a little piece of information that's kind of interesting.
Any thoughts on those comments, Seba, about the compensation of charter school teachers versus non-traditional public school teachers?
You know, I completely agree with Jill. If we could pay our teachers more, we absolutely would. I agree that teachers are not compensated for the amount of work that they do. As you know, as a teacher myself, I can say that I was spending hours and hours on the weekends at nights with my students, planning for my classes. And certainly, in this state, in this country, we don't compensate our teachers the way that they deserve. I completely agree. You know, our teacher retention rate is 75% in Kip area schools, and it's something, of course, that we're continuing to work on and want to improve. But we're proud that we have a 75% teacher retention rate. Our teachers tend to stay with us. And we have quite the mix of teachers. We have teachers who are who've been teaching for over 30 years, and we have teachers who are brand new to teaching. And so I think, you know, we have a wide range of diversity of teachers, both in their prior experience and what they bring to our schools.
This is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing charter schools with our guests Seba Ali with the Kip Bay Area Schools, Deborah Davis, research manager with Center for Research on Education Outcomes, from Stanford University, and Jill Wins with the San Francisco Unified District School Board and recently elected president of the California School Boards Association. 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. Or email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com if you want to join our conversation, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. So before we go to our next caller, it seems like we have a little bit of a convergence here. That I wouldn't have predicted from the beginning of this hour, which is that, you know, the key to the charter school, whether you want to call it public or not, whether you think it's accountable enough or not, is local control. The schools get to fiddle with the curriculum to their liking. They get much more control over things that have to do with hiring and firing practices, and basically you're putting the hands power of the education into the hands of the local educators. And Jill, your thought is that's not such a bad idea.
Well, I actually like that. But here's an interesting thing. When you said when you asked earlier, you know, does the research show what makes the high achieving charter schools achieve higher? One of the things that I've heard in a lot of the research, or that people are saying, is that they think that charter schools run by charter management organizations like KIPP do better than those that are just on their own. And I find that fascinating, because what I think those charter management organizations are virtual school districts. Mm-hmm. So it turns out you really need a school district to help you run a school. You know, you really can't do all the professional development on your own. You really can't do the curriculum development. You really we have in the San Francisco Unified School District kinds of support services that we are often called on by our charters in our school district to help them. We have crisis management team when something happens in the community or in the school, on and on and on. And so that, I think, is one of the issues. We have a lot of local control of those kinds of decisions in San Francisco Unified. We believe strongly in school-based planning and decision-making.
But do schools get to hire and fire?
They get to. Within the rules that we have, so that teachers have their employment rights protected, so they get screened. But what we have in San Francisco Unified is that we have school committees that get to interview candidates for the administrative positions and to have input. The board has to vote on those technically, but we let the school make the recommendation, and the principals get to interview and choose their teachers.
Said earlier, why not we just throw out the school code and start over again? Why hasn't that happened yet?
Because
you sound like a powerful voice in this debate.
Because there's conflict about this. You have those same, actually controlled by the Democrats, legislature that wants to say, oh, we need to have more charter schools. When you say to them, hey, let's suspend the code, they're like, oh, no, we can't do that. Because they, you know, and they kind of don't get it that they're being, you know, they have this conflict in themselves. They were arguing against themselves. The ambiguity doesn't, they don't agree with that or embrace that. So,
okay.
You know, we're working on that.
So let's go to an email and a call. We have an email from John in San Francisco saying, given KIPP's results for kids getting APIs in the top 10% of California schools, 90% of them who are of color and 75% of lower income, why specifically does board member Wins oppose the expansion of KIPP schools in San Francisco?
Actually, we haven't had any expansion proposals in San Francisco, but here's one of the reasons. First of all, what we haven't said about KIPP, when you asked, you know, how do you get this kind of success, is that KIPP has a point of view and a style of instruction and organizing their school. I would characterize it as highly structured and highly disciplined. And that I think that's okay. People should get to choose that if they want to. And I actually think that that's one of the things that we should discuss more in our own school district. Do we have enough choices for the families that KIPP appeals to, or are those students being well served in our own school district? We have those discussions, but not as much in depth as I would like us to. So the reason that I oppose the expansion of charter schools in San Francisco is that I think that one of the most important decisions that you elect your school board to make is how many schools you need in your community, and how, because there is a limited pot of resources, and you want to focus them on students' needs.
So are you concerned that the growth of charter schools will continue to deprive traditional public schools of their funding?
Sure, it will if we reach a tipping point where we have so many schools. And I'll give you an example. Oakland Unified, which totally embraced the, you know, reform of the day, that was charter schools and lots of small schools, both publicly managed small schools within Oakland Unified and small charter schools. And now they're faced, given the budget situation, but also the declining population, of having to close down lots of those schools because they just can't afford to have that many schools.
And we have a few callers coming in the last couple of minutes of the program. Let's go first to Tom from San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. My understanding is that charter schools not only have the ability to screen out teachers that don't fit the model of the school, but they have more flexibility in terms of screening out students as well. So I think this is also something that needs to be considered when we talk about comparing charter schools to public schools. Can I get a comment on that?
Yeah. Yes. Thanks so much, Tom, for your call. Given the short time we have left, I'll have you take your answer off the air. So back to you, Seba, on this question. It seems like this question keeps coming up about how equitable is the access to charter schools. And I'm going to ask you to talk about that. I'm also going to ask Deborah to talk about that.
Thank you. So at KIPP Area Schools, we've worked really hard to reduce our student attrition rate over time. And right now, last year, 90% of KIPP Area students returned for this school year, which is an increase from previous years. So it's something that we're continuing to work on. It's something that we're not perfect at, but we have a long way to go, but it's something that we're really committed to improving.
And what accounts for the attrition?
A variety of factors. Students move. Parents, our school hours are from 7:30 to 4, excuse me. Parents may have conflicting activities after school. Parents may not choose KIPP, but we do not let students go for academic performance. And in egregious circumstances, we'll have that we have similar expulsion policies to the school districts. But we have a lower expulsion rate than the state of California. We really do everything that we can to keep our students. And in areas where the local school districts, as Mathematica study found in 2010, school districts have a higher attrition rate for students serving our students in our communities than KIPP does. We work very, very hard to keep all of our students with us and help them get to and through college.
And Deborah, why is this impression sticking with some of our callers that charter schools have a lot more choice in the matter than perhaps the people that are choosing them?
I think when people hear choice, they think that that there could be sort of this kind of shady thing going on, but I can tell you that it's not borne out by the data. So what we saw in our big study was that charter schools take students at the bottom 10% all the way up to the top 10%, and it's pretty normally distributed. of students in performance, and the percent free and reduced price lunch was actually a little bit higher than in those the feeder schools that the students came from. A little more students of color, a little higher proportion, a little bit lower in special ed, and about the same in English language learners. So it's very similar populations as the schools that the charter schools are pulling from.
Okay, and let's go next to Ray from San Francisco. Welcome to the program, Ray.
Yeah, hello. I had a quick question about on the compensation side, having to do with pensions. Are most charter school teachers covered by the pension plan?
Yeah, they are, because we have a state teacher's retirement system. So the state runs the retirement system, not the individual school districts. And most charter schools pay in, they're the teachers and the schools pay into the state teacher's retirement system.
And what was behind your question there, Ray?
Ultimately, what I was going to get to, but it's taken different direction, was the cost of the pensions on the school system in general. And I am Democrat, I am pro-labor, but when you look at, especially in our area with technology and with other things going on, most people in today's work environment outside of government aren't covered by a pension. And that's part of the budget problem that's crippling the school system in general, I think.
Well, it is sort of, but it isn't so much the pensions, because we've given that to the state. And by the way, STRS, the state teachers retirement system, is not in trouble like PERS, the public employee retirement system, all the rest of the public employees in the state. But so it isn't so much the pensions. I'll say that our San Francisco Unified is one of the districts that has a very large retirement obligation, but it is for lifetime health benefits, not for the pensions, because they are paid mostly by the state.
Okay, in the last couple of minutes of the program, I just wanted to get each of our guests to kind of have some closing comments here about what are the next steps that you see. Well, Devra, what are the next steps you see in the research around charter schools, and what do you anticipate we'll find?
Sure. Well, the next study that we're working on is on charter growth and replication. So we're looking at charter performance as a charter grows up and ages, and also at what point in both age and performance charters replicate and become sort of networks. And I don't know what we'll find, actually. We may find that, like teachers, you get better over the first few years of your career, and then kind of level off. That may be what we find.
And Jill, do you have hope for the school code or the ed code being tossed out anytime soon?
No, but I do have hope that we'll have that discussion more about what's the value of the regulatory system, and the interesting thing is that the legal and regulatory system is where we embed accountability. So when people say we want you to be less bureaucratic and more accountable, that's crazy.
It's hard to do both.
That's what administrators do. I hope we'll be talking more realistically about this.
And Seba, how should the conversation move forward at this point from your point of view?
I think we should continue to talk about results. I think we should continue to talk about accountability. And at KIPP, our ultimate measure is looking at our college graduation rates. And I hope that we continue as a charter school movement to continue to talk about that. How many of our kids are getting to and through college, and what are we doing to support them? And I hope that charter schools continue to grow, and that we continue to collaborate with our school districts so that we can exchange ideas and together serve all of our students.
And that's City Visions for this evening. Our guests tonight were Seba Ali. She's Chief Academic Officer for Knowledge is Power Program, or KIPP Bay Area Schools. Devra Davis, Research Manager with the Center for Research on Education Outcomes, or CREDO, at Stanford University. And Jill Wins with the San Francisco Unified School District Board and President of the California School Boards Association. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you.
For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, to subscribe to alerts, check out our website at cityvisionsradio.com. Our engineer this evening was Eric Jansen, and tonight's show was produced by Victoria Thorpe. Welcome, Victoria, with help from Susie Britton. City Vision's senior producer is Judith Sansone, and Neil Freese manages our website. Join my co-host Lauren Melter next Monday when we look at the impact of sports-related head injuries. This is Joseph Pache. Thanks for listening. Good night, and have a great week.